I remember the first time it ever happened to me, there was a line of redcoats. And the guns had never gone off. It was a very light little incident. It went click. That was the end of that. But just for that instant, that line of redcoats was about the realest line of people I ever saw in my life. Everywhere, you see, all ready for volley fire with their flintlocks, you know. There was an action back in the days, you know, when you tipped your hat and you said, "Your first shot, gentlemen." And for some reason or other, due to various complications, why, the volley had never arrived. In fact, the flintlock hammers were just about halfway down on the priming pan. You know, there they were. They had to go the rest of that way, and the guns had to fire. And it was many, many years ago. And I said, "That's an interesting mechanism," because I just saw it as a mechanism. Since it wasn't very affecting to me, I wasn't worried about redcoats. And I looked afterwards, I looked for it, to see if I couldn't find it. Many, many, many years later, I found it, man. I found it, man. You see, anybody's got one or two or three of these things, you see, when they start in from scratch, you know, before they get up in the grades. They'll have a point there, and they're flicking around, and all of a sudden, why, there is a fighter plane, or there is the ground, you know. Or there they are on the edge of the cliff, and the arrow hasn't quite arrived. And for just a split instant, as you see the thing, boy, that arrow is really real, man. That has made an impression. Time has been stopped, and when you run back into it, you'll find a stop picture. But remember, you and I are running back into it. Do you get the difference? It has never went on from there. He never advanced from that moment. He's there in totally absorbed attention. And these walls to the SP are phony and thin. He knows where the real walls are. The real walls are in that instant. And that instant is more real to him than present time with every tick of the clock. And that incident contains something. It contains other personalities, other vengeances. But you moving around outside of this person, you moving around outside of this person, are part of the dramatis persona of his incident. And you are a threat. Because all life is this incident. There he is, driven against the cliff and being butchered by man monsters. He's next in the line of captives. And in the trillions which followed, he's always been next in the line of captives. This person is living a nightmare that was once very real. It isn't, as the psychiatrist said, something which didn't exist. I would never take the opinion of a suppressive person on what the track was all about. Anyway. He's always been the next one to be killed. Maybe the other personnel out there are Roman legionnaires or some past track Rome. But whatever it is, his bank got stacked, 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 till he no longer had fluidity, no longer could move on this track. And then he got the business. Well, you could only get the business that solidly if you yourself had enough overts to stretch from here to Halifax and back. But there he is. And he's never been any place else. Not from that moment on. You are the Roman legionnaire. You are part of the game. Now, that is all there is to an SP. There aren't warped brain cells or numerous other things. There aren't thousands of answers to this. It is that answer. And you, in practicing Dianetic auditing, run into a mental image picture. All right. Now, a person has a lot of these mental image pictures. Now, don't blame me if a person's mental image pictures, perfectly accurate, go back further than man likes to think he has lived. Don't blame me for it, because anybody you audit in Dianetics will run into just that. You audit them long enough, and there they go. Man is an immortal being, and he did not get born in sin at the beginning of this lifetime. By the way, if you want to argue, that gets somebody to run you on some engrams so you fall through and see for yourself. Anyway, the point is here that this is something that has happened to the fellow. Like, he's being beat up by a bunch of cops, and there he is, and he has never been out of being beat up by a bunch of cops. He's just stuck in time being beat up by the cops, you see? Now, that makes everyone he runs into a cop, male or female, peculiarly enough. His power of differentiation is zero. Everything equals everything in the instant. And that is the boy. And it makes him choose wrong targets. He can't complete a cycle of action because he's stuck in time. It makes him perform little overts because he's defending himself continuously. Defending himself against the police. Now this is the character. This is the character called an SP. And he isn't anyplace else. Now, of course, with power processing, he can be blasted loose. And being blasted loose, he is able to function again on the track, and now he will respond to processing. It's as simple as that. But how can a cop or a Roman legionnaire audit him? If you get the difference. That's the only problem to be solved in handling an SP. It isn't an auditing problem. It's a problem of the identity of the auditor. Now, you'd just be amazed how many cases resolve in an institution. I know, I put my collar on backwards many a day and audited psychos. In institutions. In many a yesteryear. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Some of the results I've had with this make me sometimes a little bit ashamed of myself that I don't push in that direction harder. Because institutions contain very few SPs. They're PTSs. The SPs are those in charge. I've seen a girl actually getting better and had a psychiatrist run up to me absolutely screaming, "You must get the family! You must get the family of this person to consent to electric shock!" "What's the matter?" "Well, we got to electric shock her." "What's the matter with the patient?" "We've got to do it!" "No, no, no. Is the patient getting worse?" "You don't understand! We're going to throw her out of here!" Are into a nut. Complete nut. The person was getting better, so they had to electric shock them. The same person told me that I didn't keep good records. I should keep records that had the time and place connected with every single action as the predominant action and so forth. And they kept good records, and I said, it's sort of like shooting at tame dogs. Talk to these fellows. I mean, it's cruel. They miss all the obvious things, like, you know, "Yes, but what do you learn from your records?" You know, a question like that never occurs to them. "What do you learn from your records?" "Oh, what do we learn?" Then complete non sequitur, you know, ding, 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 here comes the wagon. Complete non sequitur. "Oh, we learned if we didn't electric shock them, they would get out of here 6 weeks earlier in each case." yet he has to like shock everybody. He even knows it doesn't help anybody. He's gotten that brave. He's gotten that blatant. Now, my only quarrel with psychiatry, in actual sober fact, is that it's not cleaned up its profession. It's got dirty hands. It's not cleaned up its profession, because if it cleaned up its profession, it would be able to view the fact that some of the things they do get results, and 90% of the things they do don't. And that the cruelty and brutality which they levy against the insane, or wage against the insane, is not getting results. If they knew about the mind, they would know how to handle their own people. So my only quarrel with psychiatry is their ethics are out. Do you follow me? Now, Frieda Fromm Reichmann, this is not my own opinion, Frieda Fromm Reichmann wrote a book on it. Someday you want to look it up. It's Frieda Fromm Reichmann. And she was one of the greatest of great. I think she's still alive. And she wrote a book in which she begged throughout the book for the psychiatrist and his profession to get in his own ethics on his own practitioners. That book is available in the Library of Congress and other places. And she is probably the dean of all American psychiatry. She was making a feeble effort to get it in. But that's the trouble. Now, my only complaint against government is being bodies charged with the responsibility of getting in law and order, never having isolated what puts lawlessness and disorder into the society, never having made any effort to understand it, but just shoots everybody. So my quarrel with them is their ethics are out. My only quarrel with politics and political theories and political practices just sum up to the same thing. They do not produce an orderly society. Any system of politics which lets a madman rise to supreme power is an evil system. Now, you as an auditor are only able to push ethics in or blame SP or PTS for your lack of results if you yourself have clean hands with your GAEs. If you yourself do not commit gross auditing errors, then you are perfectly at liberty to handle ethics. But as long as you yourself have any question, then you will never quite know. And this is the difference between a confident auditor and an unconfident auditor, and is the primary difference. Is it my auditing, or is it the case I'm auditing? That is the unresolved question. Is it my auditing which is getting no gain, or is it not possible to get gain on this case? And that is why I started this lecture by telling you I don't have to make any apologies now. We're taking them all the way to clear, and there's nothing going to be changed of any kind whatsoever in the lower grade processing, because the only time we're flumping and flubbing is when ethics go out or technology is not followed. It is omitted or added to. You omit pieces of technology or you add to technology, it will cease to work. Right now they've got one going. They've got one going now, which I'm sure is ended as of this afternoon. They've had one going about below 2. If the tone arm goes below 2, then horrible things will happen, because a person who is a low tone arm case will never experience any gain except on power processing. That is the wildest misinterpretation. I just wish they just forget about it. I don't care anything about it anymore. I don't want to hear about it anymore. If the tone arm goes to 1-0 and stays there, I don't want even want an instructor to say that is a peculiar and particular and interesting phenomenon. I don't want nobody to do nothing, because apparently this is a very dangerous cat, and it will suddenly run and get all over and scratch everybody up like mad. You see, in actual fact, this tone arm, quite often in processing, will go through seven. There's seven, and you go down there, and you have to come back up over here. Or it goes all the way up through here and comes back on the dial there. And this quite commonly happens in POW processing. And it'll happen in lower grade processing, too. This guy's bank going up, 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 up. And all of a sudden, you can't go any up, up, up. Well, don't despair, because you'll catch it over here. You see, bring it back over here to below one. And all of a sudden, you'll find it's going up, 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 up. Cases are circular. And the actual remark on this is that a chronic low TA case, that is a symptom of rather chronic apathy. He's not a dangerous case, he's simply apathetic. A chronic low tone arm case, which is somebody who's chronically below two, won't really get over it until he's on power processing. And that is the total substance of the remark that started this whole thing. So if I had a very low tone arm case and I wanted to be very kind, I would run the power process on him, which would bring his tone arm up and then start him into auditing. You see, if I wanted to be very kind. But if I had any doubts about its success or anything like that, I would just audit him any old way. He's going to get some gains in an apathetic way. That's an additive. People are trying to get interpretations about below two. If the tone arm goes below two, you do this or you do that. Or if the tone arm goes below two, you can't get on the clearing course. Or, you know, it's wild. So a tone arm goes below two. It also goes to seven. I've seen an auditor practically faint when he's seen a tone arm. How the hell do you audit anybody at seven? You can't get the meter to go through. Actually, there is a way to do it. You throw your trim knob. You just flip your trim knob and you'll come back on the dial. Of course, it's totally an accurate read, but you can make the meter go through seven without catching it over. Up to six and then over to one and up. Throw your trim knob. You'll throw him back on the dial. Then don't forget to compensate your meter before you say the next guy's released. So there's an additive. There's an additive. I don't know how many people this additive has shot down in flames up to this moment. It's just several. Several. You know, there's some fat folders around and so forth. Unfortunately, it isn't I finding all this and so forth. It's I that found this below two thing. But it was already been stated to me by somebody in the qual division that this. There was a common denominator in those folders. They each one had a below two trouble. And so I'm getting a shakedown of the relationship of a fat folder to a below two phenomenon, just as a peculiarity that's going on at the moment. That's an additive. That's an additive. Now you get an omission. And an omission can be very, very deadly. We cease to have sessions that start and end. You know, we don't start any sessions anymore. We don't end any sessions anymore. We just sit down and start auditing, you know. Pretty wild, because it never completes the cycle of action for the PC and has a tendency to make him obsessively go on. That's how bad an omission could be. But your little omissions can cause you equal lots of trouble. Your little omissions, you see. How about the omission of acknowledging? Supposing you never acknowledged anything. You just omitted that totally. You destroy the entire technology. You see, it could be very serious. But your problem, to get right back down to it again, is how can you be sure? You see, it used to be that we had three problems here. Ron could be wrong, you see. And it could be the auditor, and it could be the PC, see. Well, now, because we're all clears, we have to drop the first one out. So, therefore, it leaves an auditor with this problem. And I don't give it to you as a light thing. I give it to you as something that's probably worried quite a few of you from time to time. Is it the way you're applying the technology, or is it the PC you are auditing? And I have seen that auditors, bless them, always err on the side that it's their own auditing. I have tried to reason with an auditor who was trying desperately to audit a PTS, who just kept on blaming her own auditing. Couldn't even hear the technology of PTS because she was blaming her own auditing so hard. And her own auditing wasn't that bad. She was auditing a PTS. And it was very, very hard to convince this auditor that a PTS was the only reason somebody roller coastered unless the auditing was very omitted or commented along various lines. Well, very hard to convince this person there could be something wrong with PC because this person was too fixated on the idea that she really didn't know quite how to audit. You see that? Now, therefore, you've got to be satisfied that you don't commit GAEs. And after that, your judgment on an ethics problem will be sound. But until you are able to know completely yourself that your auditing is smooth and your technology is correct, you will not, with any certainty, be able to spot an ethics problem. Makes sense, huh? Now, that's the primary bugaboo of the auditor. You're trying to help people. Now, is there something wrong with the person you're trying to help, or is something wrong with the way you're helping? And there's a very easy way to decide this. Very, very, very easy way to decide this, and that is to know what are the five GAEs. Now, we say GAE. And we mean gross auditing error. There it is, a gross auditing error. And there are only five of them. You can't commit 105 because there aren't 105. You can only commit five. That's a good thing. Because they can be spotted and isolated. And they are very, very elementary. Anybody could spot them. You could make a tape of yourself auditing some PC and then listen to the tape back and know whether or not you committed GAEs. It's that elementary. First GAE particularly would surrender to that test. Auditing cycle out. Do you give an auditing command? Have the PC answer it and then acknowledge it? Elementary. Do you do that? Or do you give an auditing command, not let the PC answer it, and acknowledge? Do you let the PC talk for half an hour before you finally wake up that you should acknowledge? Do you see? Or do you have this smoothly down? Can you do this thing? Boy, it's an elementary thing there, isn't it? Well, not to do it is a gross auditing error. It's one of the reasons Scientology works is because of its communication drill. Communication is a basic. So fundamental that when you use the communication cycle of action, known in Scientology, man didn't know it, you can just use the cycle of action and cure things up. It's the most remarkable thing. You can sit down with the training drills, which just handle the cycle of action, and with a bunch of people that have just dropped into the org or something of the sort, and two or three of them will get rid of some somatics and upsets. Feel better. What's doing that? It's just the exercise of the drill itself. So woven through auditing are all kinds of little side benefits. But this is not a little side benefit. When you admit this one, man, you've had it. So do you handle your comm cycle well? Or do you give an auditing command? Not let it be answered, or make it be answered exhaustively before you finally acknowledge. or do you hit it on the button? Do you err over or under? Because if you err in not acknowledging, your PC will go into an obsessive outflow. Wherever I see a PC who's just talking on and on and on and on and on and on and on, the auditor giving no commands. Only 4 commands issued in a 2.5-hour session. See? When I see this, I know what's wrong. That's a GAE. The auditing cycle is out. The PC is trying to find that last step. Can't find that last step. And he's gotten so accustomed to this. Now, some PCs are this way obsessively in life, but you, oddly enough, by a precise auditing cycle, snap them right out of it. A proper auditing command cycle and so forth will straighten them right up. Now, you'll notice people out in the society, you should listen to their auditing cycles just for a gag. Does your auditing cycle sound anything like that? You should listen to a few of them, you know. Lean up against a lamppost with your back to the two that are discussing it all, or sit in the lobby of a hotel for a while. Just listen to those auditing cycles. They're not auditing cycles, listen to calm cycles. You'll be fascinated then. You got a treat in store if you've never done this. Say, how could anybody call that communication? Now that's the first GAE. Now the second GAE is the repetitive auditing cycle is out. Now the repetitive auditing cycle is quite something else than the auditing cycle. It's being able to do it again. And people who aren't able to do it again cannot give a repetitive auditing command. On and on. They can't do it. So they do what we call Q&A. They change. The PC makes a remark, so they change the process. Every time the PC gives something offbeat, then the auditor changes the process. Do you see? The Q&A. Here's an example of Q&A, or just the inability to do birds fly, and acknowledge it each time and so forth. It's do birds fly. Are the jolly little sparrows a wing? Are birds flopping about? Are birds? Have you ever been an ornithologist? Do you swim? Where'd he go, see? The Q&A is simply the shift with the PC. It leaves the PC in control of the session. The auditor starts out, do birds fly? And the PC says, yes, I had a canary once. And the auditor says, where was that? PC says, in Des Moines. And the auditor says, were you there when you were a child? If you ever listen to this as a gag going on, I mean, it really happens. When you listen to this going on, you will begin to detect a note of exasperation in the PC's voice. A bit of asperity will enter at this point. Well, yes, I lived there, but I was 4. Q&A. Drift. You ask an auditor does it. You ask this auditor, and you say to him, now get the overt. And he comes back with a life story of the fellow's brother. Well, that'll be compounded of Q&A, but also another one.
He just wouldn't do what you said, you see.
He wouldn't audit it at all. He didn't even come near it. Now, the next GAE,
it's just bad meter reading. And you would just be amazed. You would just be amazed until you stood around teaching people to meter read. You'd just be amazed how in that group, 2 or 3 of them won't even vaguely come near reading that meter. If you're going to find out what's wrong with some auditing session sometime, and you've got an HCC auditor and your DP or something like that, and you're tearing your hair out about this PC, remember these GAEs, man. You get suspicious about things like, how about the meter?
Well, the auditors have been auditing the PC with his meter uncharged. Well, that'd be a understandable error. But how about the fellow auditing the PC without the meter turned on? Could happen. How about the auditor auditing the PC without the cans plugged in? Now, that's what we mean when we say GAE. And you, in trying to examine auditing, will always err in the favor of being too reasonable about the thing. You argue and argue and you argue and argue, talk with his auditor about the PC, and then you find out that the auditor doesn't believe in meters and so doesn't use them in a session, or something like this. I mean, it's gross. And that's why we have gross, you see. It's a gross error. It's always something big, you see. You're blowing your brains out trying to find this little thing. Do you have the trim knob set exactly right and all that sort of thing? Trim knob set right? Why, the meter's been out of repair for the last 2 months. Hadn't been functioning at all. Auditor rocks the meter to get his reads. Now, an old, experienced director of processing like Mary Sue could tell you some wild ones. She's tried to run down and tried to run down, and, you know, the mysterious non-recovery of somebody. And she's finally run it down to something like, well, they never turned on their meter. It's incredible. Here she's beating her brains out trying to help the PC, you see, but gross auditing error sitting right there. Now, the fourth one impinges a bit on the second one. You told him to run one process and he ran something else. It goes worse than that. He's not able to read, understand, and follow procedure. That's a simple test. That's a simple test. Can you read and understand an HCLB? That is a simple test. You would just be surprised when that gets to be a gross auditing error. A person didn't even read that HCOBs related to the processes they were supposed to be auditing. And to our shame, it once happened here at St. Hill. There was no checkouts required for a short period of time, many, many months ago. There were no checkouts required. Nobody in Tech or Qual is there now. Not because of that, totally. But before they audited the hottest processors in the world, nobody was requiring a checkout on them. Boy, that's a gross auditing error, man. Now, one of the reasons Tech was having a hard time in 1965 in organizations is there apparently wasn't a D, a P, anywhere in any organization in the world outside of St. Hill that was requiring star-rated checkouts on the lower-grade processes his auditors were supposed to be running on the PCs. Interesting, huh? Oh, I get on to these things and I follow them up and don't think we're all bad. But that accounted for lack of releases. Of course they weren't making any releases. They weren't running any of the processes that released anybody. See, that's a gross auditing error. It's not being able to read and comprehend what they're supposed to do. Or not reading it at all. See how gross this is. You say, you just seem to be an awful long time, Mr. Jones, on the subject of making your that PC, just making that PC a grade zero. This seems to have been on, this is going on to the third month. Seems to be just a little bit long. What's wrong? What are you doing? Well, actually, the way you'd find out what he's doing is he's auditing cycle out. He's repetitive auditing cycle out. He's reading a meter badly. And what you're liable to find with something like number four. He has never run, to date, any of the processes that make a grade zero release. He's never run any of them. It's that
It's that which you normally find at the bottom of no results in auditing, or it's an ethics problem. And the fifth one is unable to handle and keep a PC in session.
Well, you'd say, well, that automatically is covered in 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, no, it is not. Who does that? Well, Ron does it, of course. He does everything else. No, that's something that you do. That is up to the auditor. It is sometimes necessary to be quite forceful. It is sometimes necessary to be quite persuasive. It is sometimes necessary to do most extraordinary things to handle and keep a PC in session. For instance, you've got somebody who's very blowy. You're trying to pull some overts of one kind or another. This session is going rough, man. And you finally have to back up your back to the door, turn the lock, put the key in your pocket. The guy finally gives you the overts. See? Now, this PC doesn't seem to be running well, and you just never take out a moment to find out why, or examine the PC, or talk about anything, or have any two-way comms. You see if the PC's disinterested. You don't make it your business to find out why is the PC disinterested. PC can't seem to answer the question for the last 4 hours of auditing, doesn't seem to have had any answer to the auditing question, is sitting in the chair crying, why 4 hours ago didn't you wonder why this PC was unhappy? Do you see? Now that's actually a matter of a quick perception. I used to say that it used to take me about an hour, or I could find from 45 minutes to an hour and a half before the auditors in the org would notice that an ARC break was coming or a blow was going to occur. It was 45 minutes to an hour and a half. And I used to do this with squawk box, you know, a patrol. We used to listen in on the sessions and so forth. I could find it on an average 45 minutes to an hour and a half before the auditor noticed it. That PC's going to blow. That PC's ARC broken. That's coming right over the hill. Just from tone of voice. Well, the auditor in this particular instance had the advantage of sitting across from the PC, having a meter in his hands, actually being able to observe what the PC was doing, you see, and didn't notice it for another 45 minutes or an hour and a half until it became terribly obvious. So you want to pick up your perception, and that is the place where nearly all auditors fall down a bit. Pick up the perception of what's going on with the PC. Be a little bit interested in what's going on with the PC and do something about it. And don't do so much that you completely destroy all effects of processing, but do enough to keep the PC in session. Now, what has been in session? Well, he's willing to sit there and answer the auditing question. He's fairly cheerful and so on. It has some precision definitions, but crudely, a PC ought to be fairly happy about being audited even when he's running through sadness. So that would be an ability to look at the PC and see what was going on with the PC. That comes under the heading of willingness to confront a PC, doesn't it? Well, those are the gross auditing errors. Auditing cycle out, repetitive auditing cycle out, bad meter reading, not able to read, understand, and follow procedures or bulletins or auditing directions. And 5, unable to handle and keep PC in session. And those are the 5 gross auditing errors. You can verify then your own auditing. And if you look over the whole thing and you look over the thing and you say to yourself, well, I do those things pretty well. Now you know whether the PC is or is not an ethics case. Because if you do those things well and the PC doesn't run well, that PC is an ethics case every time. You see? Now there's how you disentangle the mystery. The whole problem of ethics is a universal problem. It is a problem in mental troubles. Ethics would never get in on discipline alone. Never. It would only get worse. Justice can never occur in the absence of an understanding of the human mind. Never. You get nothing but goofs. Now, that doesn't necessarily make somebody who is an expert on the human mind, such as a Scientologist, the only person who should have anything to do with justice on the planet. Or does it? But I would not for a moment guide you over into a realm of high specialization in the field of justice, because ethics simply exist to get tech in. Once you've got tech in, you no longer need justice. We are the only road which leaves artificial measures of law and order behind us. And it's only the fact that we are handling aberration itself that makes it necessary for us to be in the zone of ethics now. The amount of ethics action necessary in actual OTs would be practically zero. Big difference. And we notice that we're not having any trouble with clears. I noticed earlier that the divisional statistics exactly matched the case state of each divisional secretary, how far he had gone or he or she had gone toward clear. Very interesting. So therefore, the problem of justice, the problem of ethics, is involved with the problem of human aberration. Unless you've solved the latter, the former can never be solved. Not all the gunpowder in the world could blow people into being good, because they're good naturally and they resent gunpowder. So there also is how you can solve the problem of whether or not you're a good auditor or not, and why you should solve the problem. And I hope this has been of some assistance to you. Thank you.